you want to take support from the wall, or you want to lie down or do anything like that, you're welcome to. There's a bit of wall space here. If it's not too near the front and you want to lean against the wood, you're welcome to. Sometimes we need to see the clever segue I'm doing here into some teaching content. Sometimes we need to take support from somewhere else, don't we? Sometimes we feel so stuck and tangled up, caught in a knot, nothing's moving, doesn't work. That sometimes happens, doesn't it? And we don't like it. The body's in pain, we've got aches, we're tired, it doesn't make sense, we're confused. Metta, I've no idea what that is. Loving kindness, it just doesn't seem to be working. And we try and push against it because we don't like it. And we try this other thing. We try and get out of it, but we just make ourselves tighter. Like, oh, okay, I'm not tight now. Because we're fighting, we're resisting, we get into a fight. The meditation's not working, so we push harder. And then it works even less and we get more tired. And we just get tied up into a knot sometimes. It might not be what you're experiencing, but it's something that is common. One of my teachers is a man called John Peacock, who some of you will know, who's a very accomplished scholar and practitioner. And he was a Tibetan monk for many years in South India. I remembered, just as I was thinking just now, a story or a teaching metaphor that I heard from him once. I think it probably is a traditional story. He might have come up with it himself, but it sounds like a sort of Indian story. And the metaphor is that we are like a monkey, and we realize that we're stuck, like there's something really sticky on the ground, like tar, and we get our foot stuck in it. It's like, oh, the flow of life suddenly stops, something difficult happens, and we're stuck. It's like, oh. So what does the monkey do? Like, gets his other foot and he tries to push himself away. And then he's like, oh, double stuck. So he's like, oh, I've got hands. tries to push himself away. It's like, I'm really stuck. And then he's got, well, this is the last chance. This better work. So there we go. And that's what we are sometimes. Like a monkey stuck to the ground on all fours. We pushed and it didn't help. So the story is that what we can do, we have to look for other options. We have to look for other ways to work with our stuckness. And one option in the story is that a monkey can, instead of putting his last hand down, can actually reach for a branch and pull from there, put himself up, and maybe work at getting unstuck. And this branch is loving kindness. Or more accurately, from the story that as I heard it, it's a group of teachings which loving kindness is a part of. Loving kindness is a translation of the word metta, as we know, and it's the most kind of well, it's a very clear and common example of the teachings on love that we find in the Buddha's traditions. And apparently it's also a pre-Buddhist teaching, these things. And loving kindness is one of these things, this metta, this loving friendliness, this care, this goodwill is one of these expressions or dimensions of love. One of these branches that we can reach up to and stop making the knot even tighter. Find something else to get support from. To get some, to help us become more more free. One thing that I think about loving kindness is that, and there's these teachings on love, these cultivation of loving qualities, is that they are very familiar to us, aren't they? They are normal. We know what it's like to be friendly. We know what it's like to be kind. We have some experience of what it's like to receive kindness. If we can become more familiar with this, we can really get a sense of, I can relate in this way, and there's some meta in it, and it feels like this. We can make that stronger, we can become more familiar with that. What it does is it increases our range. It increases the range of the ways that we are able to relate. It develops our skill as a relator, doesn't it? We're like, oh, we have this option now to evoke and step into and remember kindness, find a sense of care, a sense of friendliness. And listening to Caroline's talk on the judge yesterday, this is also a part of our range as well, isn't it? How we judge ourselves and we judge others, usually without much choice. It's too late, it's already happened, it just hurts, and we're judging. We're criticizing in an unhelpful way, self or other. But when we learn something like loving kindness and these teachings on love that we're going to unpack this evening, it actually gives us other options. It gives us other options in how we relate, how we see the world, how we act in relationship to this body, this person, you. You know, it gives us more freedom, more choice, more skill, more ability to relate in different ways. So just the act of learning to become more familiar with these ways of relating, these intentions, these perceptions, these world views, these loving ways of being. This is a really precious resource in the face of the self-punishment and the self-criticizing that we do. Don't you think? I also think of loving kindness and the group of practices that it traditionally comes with as a way of going beyond unhelpful kinds of self-centeredness. Self-centeredness. Self-centeredness doesn't have a very good reputation, does it? If you say, "Oh, I met your new boyfriend the other day. What's he like?" He said, "Oh, he's really self-centered." It's not like a good thing on a dating app. You're not like, yeah, 2 degrees, self-centered. You know, it's not something that you want to be. You don't want to be self-centered. I think there are good ways of being self-centered. It's kind of self-centered to be here, isn't it? We're putting ourselves at the centre. We're sitting in the centre of ourself. And we're saying, what am I? And we're attending to ourself. We're opening to ourself. We're being interested in ourself. We're putting ourself, our feelings, our thoughts, our perceptions, our body, under the spotlight of our investigation. So that's a kind of self-centeredness. We're saying the self is at the centre of my inquiry. What is the self? That's a helpful kind of self-centeredness, isn't it? Hopefully. Otherwise we're not doing anything useful here. But there are also unhelpful kinds of self-centeredness. You know, narcissistic obsession. Where we are like the monkey who's stuck on the tar. We're stuck in selfing, and we try and get out of it by being more self, bigger, better, stronger meditator, more successful meditator, and then we just like, oh my God, even tighten the knot. So these teachings on love and compassion are ways to move out of unhelpful kinds of self-centeredness. It's another way we can understand what we're doing here. Could say we're learning more skillful ways of selfing. We're learning more skillful ways of being, of selfing, of thinking, of seeing people, self, world. Have you noticed today, if you've been doing the practice with the good friend, bringing them to mind, looking deeply at them, hello being, other being with your life's challenges and your life's strengths, be well, be safe. Does anything change in the way that you experience the image of them, if you have an image of them, when you wish them well? That's something to be interested in. When we have the Metta glasses on, things look different, don't they? When we're full of aversion and we're like, oh, really tired, annoyed, this isn't working, people look annoying. Things look annoying. Put the loving kindness glasses on, people look kind of beautiful. They look lovable. They look worthy of our attention. At least this is a hypothesis. See if it's true. I've lost my train of thought. Okay. So what are these teachings which John Peacock was saying is the branch that the monkey can get free from? Some of you will be very, very familiar with these already. There are a group of teachings called... there's lots of different words for them. Apamanyas was a word that I mentioned, I think it was yesterday. Apamanyas, it's an old Indian word, which means limitless or boundless. There's a group of teachings which supposedly are helpful to us, and they're called boundless practices, limitless qualities. That's interesting, isn't it? Why is loving kindness limitless? What could that mean? Another word that describes these practices is Brahma Vihara. Brahma being God, or divine, heavenly. Vihara meaning home. You go to a Buddhist Vihara, that's just what they say. Oh, have you seen this monk? Yeah, he's down at the Vihara. That's where he is, it's just a normal word. Vihara, home, place. Place to be. Place of the gods. So what is this realm of our life that we're opening up to here with metta practice, which is limitless, boundless, and the home of the gods? And why is it useful? Lots of questions I have about this stuff. Well, let's have a little tour around these qualities. There's four sort of dimensions of love, four Brahmaviharas, four Apamanyas, four ways that we can engage the heart in a healthy way in our lives. Friendliness, this is the one we're really leading with. Be well. Hello. It's like a handshake. Love when it is connecting. Sometimes loving kindness, love when it's connecting. I think this might come from a teacher and friend of mine called Martin Aylward, but he may have got it from somewhere else, I don't know, but I like to use some of these ideas that come from people. When love is connecting, when we're connecting in a loving way, in a friendly way, it's like loving kindness. Hello, how are you? Nice to see you. Love that connects. May you be well, be safe. Hope the job interview goes well. Human kindness. It's kind of got, sometimes loving kindness has got a, just such a sort of a sweet, smiley quality to it, doesn't it? It can be fluffy. Pink, fluffy little bunny rabbits. Hello. Oh, bunny rabbit! Oh, it's easy to have loving kindness for a puppy, isn't it? They're so sweet. Hello, little puppy. That's a kind of love. But when you're sitting here and it's after lunch and you're tired and your knees hurt and your back is tense and you're full of aversion, you don't really think of puppies, do you? You're not really like, oh, aversion. I love retreats. They're so nice. Tense, tired, confused, annoyed, maybe. But that doesn't mean that we can't engage our hearts in a loving way with our experience, with our practice. It does mean that the quality of love has to change a little bit or a lot. And this is where we are asked to discover the second of these Brahmaviharas, these limitless qualities. The second of these is traditionally compassion. You're sitting here and sincerely trying to engage with the loving kindness practice, either towards yourself or to a friend. And what you're getting is resistance and pain and impatience and boredom and frustration, and it doesn't seem to be working. Can you have some compassion for yourself? It's hard, isn't it? It's hard to work with the stuff of the mind. How can we have compassion for ourselves? Can we bring the heart to bear on the ache in the shoulder? Can we breathe with an ache in the body, with a feeling of irritation in the body, with a feeling of sadness, feeling of loneliness, feeling isolated, feeling confused, feeling judged? Can we bring our attention in a loving way to that which is painful? So loving kindness might be something like, hello, nice to see you. I wish you well, go well. Compassion might sound something more like, may you be deeply held in the middle of your grief. May you feel held in the middle of your sadness. May the universe conspire to support you in this thing which is really hard to bear right now. It's got a different quality, hasn't it? It's not fluffy bunnies and puppies. It's a little bit more serious. A little bit more sober, perhaps. A little bit cooler, maybe. Compassion comes with a real interest to know and discover what is helpful. What will relieve this suffering? What will help with this sadness that's hard to feel right now? Imagine you're with a baby who's crying and you don't know why it's crying, and you pick it up and you're holding it and it's like, I really don't know what's wrong, but I want to find out what's wrong. Maybe it's hungry, maybe it's tired, maybe it needs its nappy changing, maybe it's got a cut on its body, maybe whatever it might be. We don't know, but we want to find out. We want to make a response that will alleviate the suffering. This is compassion, isn't it? This is love that responds. Metta is love that connects. Compassion is love when it's responding. It's like the heart can kind of take the shape of whatever suffering is there and sense into it and feel like, well, what do you really need? I'm not going anywhere. You can take as long as you need to be here. Sadness. Worry. What do we need? What do you need? It's okay. What do you need? What do I need? So if your loving kindness needs to turn into compassion because there's something quite challenging arising, that's the practice. You can change the words if you like to use words. It's not everybody's cup of tea using words, but they are a powerful way of working with this stuff. You might want to change the words. You might want to say, may I find peace in the middle of this tension. May I find relief. May there be relief from this agitation. May I May I have what I need to be able to work with this and heal. Kind of about healing. May I have healing? So you can change the words and it changes the tone, but it's still an expression of love. It's still an expression of, it's a way of engaging the heart in a helpful way. That continues this cultivation of these helpful qualities. But life isn't all just struggle, is it? It's not all about healing and resolving difficulties and working with our really heavy stuff. It's not all like that. It's not just doom and gloom and despair. Thankfully. Sometimes it seems like it might be. If it does seem like it's always really difficult, it never works, it's just not fair, then we're probably stuck to the ground like that. And we need to find one of these branches. The next of these qualities is it balances our compassion. If we're working too much with difficulty the whole time, and we're getting fatigued with having to be compassionate the whole time, and we don't see any light, then there's another quality that we can evoke and rely on. And this is a quality called empathetic joy. Mudita is the old Indian word, mudita. Gentle joy, I've heard it described as. That was from John Peacock as well, gentle joy. So if loving kindness is love that connects, compassion is love that responds, mudita is love that celebrates. Can you celebrate the good work that you've been doing today? Can you rejoice? That's a slightly biblical word. Rejoice. Rejoice in your endeavours. Can you appreciate what you've been doing today? Can you appreciate what anybody in this room has been doing today? Appreciative joy. So is this one? We are allowed to take ownership of our practice and say, I actually did something really good today. I did something valuable today. I showed up, I came back. It was really difficult actually, but I kept coming back and I learned some stuff. Found a bit more space around this thing that's been driving me crazy. And I got some real calm. I've discovered a new mind state. It's starting to make sense for me. I did good. We're scared to do that sometimes because it's kind of arrogant and proud, and we're like, yeah, I did really good today. I'm better than you lot. I'm such a good meditator. That stinks, doesn't it? It's like, yeah. But we can have a good appreciation of ourselves in a healthy way. It's also possible to appreciate the success in others, which is a really key part of this this third kind of love. This. Appreciative joy. Have you seen anybody in the retreat who looks like they're doing really well? Who looks like they're really smiling, they're really happy. They're like, really still, beaming, big smile, light pouring out their ears, or wherever it's supposed to come from. What happens when you see somebody like that? It's kind of hard, isn't it? It's hard to see. Or when somebody in your office that you work with closely, they get a promotion. Or they get a pay rise. Or one of your friends becomes a famous rock star. It happens. Or a famous writer. Or something starts going really well for somebody else. It's like, oh, well done, that's so good. And you're like, it's hard to let that in, isn't it? We get jealous. We want to cut them down sometimes. We don't want them to succeed. We don't want them to be bigger. Because it shows us where we feel we lack, probably. It's hard. It shows us, oh, life just doesn't seem to be working. Oh. It makes us have to feel that stuff, which is hard to feel. It might be one thing that's happening. appreciative joy, or the love that's when it's celebrating, it allows us to share in the success of other people. So when you hear in the small group that somebody's meditation is just like going really well, and they just seem calm and centered and enlightened, and you know, in a beautiful space, with mudita we can appreciate that. We can think, that is really good. That is really good. That makes me happy to hear that. May your jhanas deepen. Even though I'm just in hindrance land, may your jhanas deepen. And then we get some of the joy which will help us with the jhanas. I mean, this is how it works. Maybe. In London, my neighbours up there had been building for 3 months. Banging, banging, drilling, shouting, loud music, bang, bang, all the time. It's been quite annoying. And just a few little moments, really instructive moments I've had of thinking, oh, when that's done, it'll be really nice for them, won't it? Yeah. They have a really nice new loft apartment, whatever they're doing up there. And this is genuine. Not many of these moments, sadly, but very significant moments. Because when I thought that, I was happy. I wasn't stressed. I wasn't blaming them. I wasn't irritated. I wasn't annoyed. I was really relaxed, and I was like, I smiled, and everything. My mind was quiet, and it was such a shift. It was like, that's really interesting. You know, I was just blaming them, projecting onto them, these bastards, they're stealing my peace and quiet and all this. And I was doing that. That's what we do, isn't it? We fix them. We fix people as the source of our suffering. And when we do that, when we objectify people in that way, giving them all this power over our feelings, we are closed to the nourishment that's available through mudita, through this appreciative joy. So when we can open to this dimension of the practice of these Brahma Viharas, these limitless qualities, actually we start to notice that all around us there's lots of good and successful things happening, and we can have some of that. It's only us stopping ourselves having some of that. Our jealousy and our tendency to fix people, those kind of things, getting in the way of us really benefiting from all of the things that are actually going well around us, in our own life and in others' lives. So, the first Brahma Vihara, metta, love that connects, friendliness. Second one, love that responds. Sincerely wanting to know what's needed to relieve suffering. The third Brahma Vihara is mudita, appreciative joy, celebrating the success of others and of self. Really letting yourself have your own goodness and celebrating the goodness of others and the success of others. The fourth one is equanimity. Equanimity is a word that I've never heard used. I mean, it's a totally normal English word, isn't it? But you never really use it in life that much, do you? You know, you don't. The policeman stops you because you're speeding. How are you today, sir? Not very equanimous, actually. Don't say that. But it is an English word. I don't know if it's a, what the Finnish translation is. What is the Finnish translation? How would you translate equanimity into Finnish? Anybody? Is it easy to do, or is it?
We might use unshakable, järkkymätön.
Unshakable.
Or stable, vakaa.
Okay.
Or tasapuolinen, kind of equal.
Equal. Unshaken, stable, equal. It's interesting, isn't it? That says so much more than equanimity when you translate it. So we've got some clues there from what Sampo is saying. Equanimity. Can your love be unshakable? Can your loving presence survive agitation and contraction. Can you maintain balance? Can you stay balanced? Equanimity is about balance. It's about finding balance more quickly. You fall off your horse, jump back on. One thing that colleagues say about their experience in meditation practice, you know, people have been practicing for a long time, isn't so much that they stop having difficult emotions. Things do change, it seems, for people quite radically. But one of the main fruits seems to be that people learn to recover more quickly from getting triggered. It's like this is something really, really precious that we get from this. We might still have flare-ups of strong feelings that are really hard to be with, but more quickly we can find balance. We start to have some useful equanimity in our life. There's a lot to say about this one, actually. And there's different kinds of equanimity. It's a word that shows up in a lot of different lists with different angles in the Buddha's teachings. Another word Sampo said was equality? Equal. Something like equal. So what we're doing with our loving-kindness practice, starting with self, and then opening it up to a friend. And then tomorrow we will open it up to somebody who we tend to ignore. We start with somebody we like, then people we tend to ignore, and then people we don't like, people we really don't like. We expand it, we grow it. We see if we can value people equally in terms of being worthy of our love and attention. Big ask in a way, isn't it? You know, it's easy to love your family and your friends. It's more difficult to love people who drive the bus, who we don't tend to notice. And it's really hard to love people who are causing a lot of harm in the world, or who we really just don't like. People doing real damage. It's quite hard to care about them and their well-being. Equanimity asks us to try and do that a bit. Can we include the Donald Trumps of this world in our hearts? Maybe all the... I won't go political. You never know what happens. Equanimity is also sometimes talking more about the balance aspect as like a grandparent with a child. If you have a... if your grandparent babysitting your grandchild... And you've seen it before because you've had your own kids. You've seen little ones grow up into adults, hopefully. And you kind of know that there's tears and there's frustration and there's sadness and your toys get broken and you stub your toe. And, you know, crazy stuff, difficult stuff happens. And it's actually no big deal because you've seen a whole life of people coming and going and things happening and there being strong emotions. Of course, the grandparent still stops the child doing something really stupid, like plugging themselves into the electricity or drinking bleach or all these things that you know, you can't let kids do. But they're not so invested. Like maybe if you have a newborn, I don't have kids myself, but maybe if you have a newborn baby or a little one, you're kind of quite close because you're so protective. You're just like, you know, you're really right up close. But the grandparents like, yeah, they're going to bump their knee, they're going to cry sometimes, they're going to get into fights. It happens, it's okay. I'm going to stop you doing this crazy thing and this crazy thing, but I'm just going to stay present with you and let you cry, let you laugh, let you make a mess. It's okay. So equanimity is sometimes love that allows, sometimes called. Love that allows things to move. It's spacious. It makes space for things. In a way, it's where we start when we say, welcome, on the first evening, welcome. First thing we were talking about. Welcome. Can you welcome yourself? That has some equanimity in it. It also has friendliness in it. These things, they work together. They're like a enlightened dance troupe that have these different moves, or martial artists with big feather dusters or something. It doesn't make sense, don't worry. another metaphor for equanimity is like a mountain in the storm. There's a storm, At the end of the storm, the mountain is still there. Maybe all the huts and the houses and the roads are blown away. The mountain's still there. Can we be like a mountain, grandparent mountain, in the middle of our life? Equanimity. There's something really neat about how these factors, these types of love work together. There's like an intelligence to the system. It's like the heart has this intelligence. It knows how to, we can learn, or it's like the heart somehow has this way of manifesting the appropriate Brahma Vihara depending on what's happening. Like you see somebody who needs suffering. You see, they really, that friend of mine who just made loads of money, they really need some suffering. You see somebody who needs some help. And you're like, okay, I'll be with this person and see. It's like, there's some compassion that comes up. You see somebody who's drunk and falling in the road. And you're like, okay, I don't know what they need, but I'll be with them. Or you see somebody who looks a bit lost at a party, and you're like, hello mate, how are you? Good to see you. What's up? You know, the loving kindness, making a connection. It's sort of, they work together. There's an intelligence about how they work. And there's also, you know, loving kindness, if it's too pink and fluffy, then compassion brings it back into reality, back into balance. It's like, puppies are fine, but there's also like really difficult things in life. That, let's not forget that. So we have puppies, but we also have, you know, working with difficult things. And then it's like, well, there's really difficult things in life, but it's not all bad. So there's celebration. The celebration brings the compassion into balance. And then there's like, well, there's loads of celebration in life, but life's not just one big long party, is it? We need to have some balance, some maturity, some groundedness, some ability to stay steady, not just go, yeah, I want to do this fun thing, and then this fun thing, and then this fun thing. Like, okay, ground, find balance, learn to be unshakable. So, you know, we all have. I'm sort of wanting to just paint a picture of a world, of a dimension, or of a world of practice, or a parts of ourselves that we can explore with these practice, these teachings on love and loving kindness and compassion. And there's so many different ways to talk about this. It's such a big topic. I mean, you wouldn't call friendliness a technique, would you, really? We think of metta as a technique, but friendliness isn't really a technique. I mean, if you were really struggling in life, you might need to go to somebody and learn how to be friendly, friendliness, social skills and stuff like that. But we use techniques, but don't lose sight of the actual thing themselves. That we do care, don't we? Sometimes we care very, very deeply about the well-being of this person, or this person, and this person. That's what's important. The phrases help us with that. They don't help everybody, but they're a powerful way of working. Sometimes when we practice like this, we develop kind of states of calm. It helps us really gather ourselves. They become like a mantra. Instead of the mind wandering off here and there and everywhere, we become very collected. There's something called metta jhana, which is an absorption into the quality of metta. It's like it can be a way that we become very focused, very calm, very quiet, and with a really deep samadhi, a really deep collected state of mind. This is one place that shows up sometimes when we practice. And for some people, this is what they like to use the practice for. This is what makes sense to them. It suits their temperament. There's also ways of working which are more interested in an insight meditation practice. This, like, if you, you know, we can sort of talk about different styles of practice, calm and insight. Loving kindness and compassion practices are a calming practice, and they are an insight practice too. Insight in the way that they ask us to really observe the sense of self and the sense of other. When we wish people well, when we do love and kindness for people, may be well, may be safe from harm. When we do compassion practice, when we may you feel deeply held in the middle of this sadness. When we do that, it starts to help us to see that people aren't objects, but they're more like subjects. So people aren't there just for our gratification or for us to blame. They're not just the noisy neighbours. We fix them as being annoying, inherently, innately annoying, and that they are the cause of my annoyance right now. That's not actually true. They're part of it. They're contributing in some way. But we have to investigate the way that we fix people as being the source of our suffering or the source of our happiness in a way where we want to own them to be happy. When we do loving kindness practice, it helps cut through that and we realise, oh, there's somebody there. However much we may disagree with them about practice, religion, politics, nutrition, fashion, whatever it might be, there's somebody behind my ideas of them. There's somebody who's experiencing life. There is an experiencer rather than an object for me to own or blame. So when we do that, we realise that the sense of self and the sense of other is conditioned. It's conditioned by our being aware with kindness or being unaware without kindness. When we're unaware and we don't have things like kindness around, we get stuck and we fix self and other. And we're stuck in a way of seeing the world where we believe that self is fixed and permanent, other is fixed and permanent, objects. Loving kindness and compassion practice can cut through that. And we stop clinging to self and other as being fixed objects. It opens up our perception of self and other into a much, much bigger space. And we start to have insight into the conditioned nature of the sense of self. In fact, we start to realise that the sense of self is something that, in quite a radical way, you can say, you can take it from this person, the meditator, and put it on that person. And really perceive another person as being self. And perceive just this body as being other. The sense of self and the sense of other is so unfixed in reality that we can actually play with it and move it around and project it onto other people. I can see Sampo as me. And there's something true, there's something deeply true about that. Sampo is me. I'm just another person. I am just another person. Yourself. Yourself. So we start to get into a kind of practice which is called exchanging self for other, which we find in some Tibetan traditions. So these practices, they help us become centered and settled and calm and collected. So precious that they help us do that. They also help us to explore the nature of our perception, the nature of the way, or they help us to shine a light on the way we experience the sense of self and the sense of other. And when we start to realise that the sense of self is actually kind of universal and not so personal, then there's some very liberating insight that happens. So if this is something that's of interest to you in the loving kindness practice, then spend some time with this part, the looking deeply part in the language of Thich Nhat Hanh, the Vietnamese Buddhist teacher, looking deeply at life, looking deeply at what is an other. We do self-inquiry, who am I? That's an old, very old traditional awakening practice. Who am I? Who am I? Who's the self? just the same. Who's other? Who are you? Who is this being? We start to realize that actually life is fairly mysterious. Our ideas about who we thought we were and who we thought all these other people were are very much open for question. We realize in some ways we know each other very intimately because we have the same sensitivity to suffering and the same wish to be well in our own way. And at the same time, you can never really fully know another person, can you? Even if you've known someone for your whole life. My mum's the only person I've known my whole life, I think, really, from the first moment. She still surprises me. It's like, Mum. Before we come to a close, does anybody want to say anything or ask anything? Be to do with the practice today or making sense of what we've been saying. I can't see, is that you, Anton?
Yes.
Yeah, hello, Anton.
Would you have any tips like phrases or something for the metta insight practice?
Metta insight practice. Who are you? I'm interested by you. I want to know how you are. How are you? Who are you? Something which has this the investigation element into it. So more of a questioning rather than the well-wishing. There's more of a questioning. What do you need? What might you need? Who are you behind my ideas of you? Things like that. I don't actually know of any book that explicitly unpacks Brahma Vihara practice as an insight meditation practice. I know it gets talked about a lot. Does anybody know any books? Christina's new book, A Boundless Heart. Christina Feldman's new book, A Boundless Heart. I think there's a German monk called Analia who's done something on it too. I'll see if I can find out about that, but I'm not so... In early Buddhist. Is it that one?
Yeah.
There's a book by a monk called Analio, and it's called, if it's the same book Caroline's thinking of, it's called Compassion and Emptiness in Early Buddhist Thought. But if we think of more, we'll put a list up.
Quite often, especially when I have difficulty in metta practice or compassion practice, there's a tendency to start craving for a repair or fix. Trying to make it better with any tool available, and it sometimes can get a bit tense or restless, the need to find a fix for this problem right now because it's hurting. Do you have anything to any guidance for working with a need to fix things as quickly as possible, how to fix things skillfully,
yeah,
without it getting very sort of like tense and unhelpful.
So loving kindness practice is a lot about learning how to cultivate certain intentions. A lot of practice is learning the difference between a helpful intention and an unhelpful intention. So if it feels like some of the intentional energy in your practice is unhelpful, then you need to be aware of it. You need to see where you're coming from. You need to shine the light of your awareness and curiosity with patience and kindness onto the impulse to fix. It's something that you're doing, it's an unconscious habit, and it'll be something that you can work with becoming more familiar with it. That's the most direct answer, the most direct way. So you have to move into a more vipassana kind of mode rather than such a metta mode, and just notice it and see what it is. What are you doing? Can you catch yourself doing it? Notice it, see what you learn. What you have to observe. Observe this tendency try and fix things, because it's somewhere in your intention, and when we have unhelpful intentions it makes a mess of things. At least that's one way of thinking about it. So that's what I would say. I would say be curious, really curious about this part of yourself that's needing to fix things quickly. See what you learn by noticing it, giving it attention, seeing what's happening in the body, what's happening in the belly. Also see what's so hard about the present experience that it needs to be fixed. What's so hard about this thing that I need to fix, that I've, you know, trying to fix things is a way of trying not to feel them actually sometimes. Trying to fix it, actually what's some, maybe there's something that needs to be felt. We're trying to push away with our loving kindness or something, with our awareness. Does that make sense?
Yes.
If you want to talk more about it to one of us, leave a note or sign up and we can look more at that, if there's more there. What was your name? Mika, that's right, yeah. Okay. I think we should probably come to a close because it's nearly an hour, so is that okay? So we have a 20 minutes or so period for some walking or a break, and then we'll come back in here for a sitting at 8:45. So do what you need to do.